Accession number 27237, Dr. Robert Nowarski, Reel 6. Now, we were talking about when you joined 302 Squadron at Northolt in November 41. And we were talking about the flights you went beforehand. Now, when we come to the operational flight, I wondered if we could look at a typical routine of a flight, you know, your first flight or any other flight, starting from when, how you'd first hear you were going on the flight, you know, I mean, in other words, right through the whole process.
Well, first of all, you, if you knew that the squadron was going to fly operationally, you would go to a briefing room. And all the pilots would be briefed, you see. And the squadron leader, or the chap who would be commanding the squadron at that time, would tell you, says, for now, this time we are going to, say, escort bombers, you see, now. They'll be, say, bombing other fields or whatever it was, you see, now. And they'll be flying at, say, 16,000, 18,000 feet. And we're going to meet them, say, 10 or 15 miles over the channel, you see. And then we shall be, say, for hours that particular, we would be, say, 3,000 or 4,000 feet above them, you see, and looking around to make sure that there's no, they can't, they're not going to be attacked by enemy fighters, you see, now. And that, and then they would, then of course they would tell you exactly what time we were. Now then they would tell you that if once they deposited the bombs, you see, then they would be flying back again, and then we would be, we would sort of escort them again, you see. We would also be told whether there were any other squadrons doing the same, so that there would be, there could be another squadron above us, at say another 3,000 or 4,000 feet above us, you see, or perhaps one on the left side of the formation and another few aircraft on the right side. Then we would be told exactly what was happening and what to expect, who would be there, at the time we would be there. And they would also tell what, they would also tell roughly what weather to expect, that, say, the cloud cover would be, say, 5-8 or whatever. And generally, roughly how long the flight would take, you see.
So what was the next? So that was the briefing. Were you allowed to ask questions? I mean,
Yes, of course you were. Yes. You. But there was usually nothing very much to ask. You see, now it is really sort of because I mean, the briefing would explain to you what you were supposed to do.
So what was the next?
Or what your squadron was supposed to do. And well, you would also be told to be taking over, say, 1,000 hours or whatever. Then you would then go to the special point and make sure that your aircraft would be prepared anyway by the mechanics anyway. So you would allocate the aircraft.
Would you always have the same aircraft?
Not always the same. No. Not always the same. No. Yeah, because I suppose if squadron would have something like about 25-30 aircraft, and some of them would not be serviceable, or some of them might not be prepared, or some of them might have just come back from a sortie, and they would have to be checked and refueled.
Now, tell me about the preparation of an aircraft by a ground crew. What were they expected to get the aircraft?
Well, they would have to make sure that your fuel, your petrol tank was full, and that your ammunition was also full, that there was nothing there. And they would generally check the aircraft to make sure that all the controls are working. We will also make sure that your radio is working. But that would have been the duty of the mechanics that would be looking after you, after your aircraft. And we always found them, without exception, that they were always very, very good sort of at looking at the thing. They would when they said thing was working, you knew it was working. You see, no, you wouldn't suddenly take off and find that you're only half full with the thing. Nothing of the sort. That was always.
Now, what about you getting ready? What would you wear? I mean, from head to foot.
Depends what you were doing. You see, now if you were going on an ordinary flight that you wouldn't exceed, say, 10,000 feet or so, you would be wearing your ordinary battle dress uniform, your shoes, which were sort of when halfway up there. Your boots. You always used where you may rest, but that was because you'd be flying over the travel, you see, so you'd be wearing your may rest as well, and of course your helmet only,
and if you were going higher than that,
then you might. But depends again on the time of the year. You would need something more substantial to put on. Because it would be too cold, you see, otherwise now. So perhaps you would put an additional sweater, you see, on. Or what we used to have actually were big stockings, not stockings actually. But they were actually stockings of thick wool, and they would go right up to your thigh.
Up to your thighs.
Yeah, over the trousers, yes. They're quite, and over the boots. So it really kept you quite warm. You around your thing, you see, you would wear your normal, your ordinary. So a battle dress, but you with the sweater underneath or whatever, that would be good enough.
And
gloves, you see, you always have big gloves.
Just one pair or several pair?
That's one pair for each flight. Yes, that was the only issue that you would get your flying gloves anyway. You always wore gloves actually when you flew.
Did you have any superstitions about things you'd take with you? Some people are superstitious, people aren't.
Myself. I know what you mean, yes. No, not myself, no. Some people had sort of little funny cuddly animals or something. So teddy bears or whatever. No, I didn't have anything out of myself, no.
You weren't superstitious then?
Not really, no.
So what was the next stage? The aircraft's getting ready. You've got your uniform on, your flying kit on. What happened?
You would don your thing that you would be flying in, and went to where we take off was at 10 o'clock. Well, you would be getting you into your aircraft about 10 to 10 or thereabouts. Getting yourself comfortable.
Was there a takeoff routine of pre-flight checks?
That would be all done. They would be all done for you. Anyway, the pre-flight checks on the aircraft.
So you didn't have to check anything.
No, you didn't have to check that. No, but when you yourself got in, you still checked some of the instruments. That was, you need to know that say you. Ultimately, would be zeroed, you would test your radio to make sure that it was working, because that was in your helmet. You see your earpieces and all that. You see, to make sure that they did actually work, and that was just about.
So, what was the takeoff routine then?
The takeoff routine was again, you would start the engine, you see, and the squadron would taxi towards the thing, and the squadron usually would then take off in sections of two. Two aircraft would take off at the same time, you see. The squadron leader would take off first with his wingman, and then the chap that would be with him.
Side by side?
Slightly behind.
In echelon.
But
in echelon.
Oh, that's right, yes. No, not like that, no. Then do your second thing, the other section of the, and then the other section and the, until the whole squadron was up. Once they, then they would make a circuit on the thing there is and join up as a squadron and flew in the direction where you were supposed to go. And usually, say for instance, if we were going to escort some things that we were going to meet them somewhere, well, they would know exactly when, at what time we should arrive. That then we would see the, it was all prearranged, they would see they where they are and start escorting them, and that was that. There was no.
Now, how would you escort? I mean, because certainly in the First World War, when you escorted, you didn't fly with them, you flew above them.
We flew above them, yes. You flew above them. And it usually, you flew in a sort of, you were weaving a bit, you see. You didn't fly straight, because the bombers were quite a bit slower than we were. And we would be flying at sort of usually about 240. You didn't want to fly any at any less than 240 knots, you see.
And how far above?
Oh, about 2 or 3 thousand feet above the bombers, you see. That is, if that was your allocated position, you could have been asked, say, to fly 5,000 feet above, you see, there. But it depends on what you were expected to, what you were told to do.
Now, the point is to get the enemy scouts, fighters, before they could get the bombers.
Well, yes, exactly.
So there's no point of flying at the same level.
No.
So you'd be weaving from side to side.
Only because, you see, if the main formation of your bombers, you see, if they were flying, say, at 200 knots or 180, and you were flying at 240, well, you had to do that, you see, to keep up with them, you see, really, to. And also, it was brilliant because you could see quite a bit.
Now, how was the? I mean, you were there. You were looking, of course, for the Germans.
Yes.
I mean, was it each man responsible for looking at everything, different people responsible?
No. You see, each chap in the formation was responsible for a segment of sky to watch out. Say, for instance, the leader would they would be scanning the in front and say 20 or 30 degrees up and same below. You see, that's what the leading section would do. Now that the right section, they would be scanning the sky over the leader. And on the left side of the formation, you see these steps there. Now the left section would be scanning the sky to the right of the formation, you see there. Because they would be covered by the right section that would be scanning there. So everybody had his own. Every section had their own sort of segment of sky to.
Now, could you see behind you?
Very difficult. It was very difficult to see behind. But then again, if you are weaving, you could see quite a bit there and quite a bit there again, you see there. And also, if it was a large formation of bombers that you were escorting, then there would be someone else at the back there anyway, at a different level, that they would take care of that part of the sky, you see. There's no.
So what would happen next then? Would you use the radio much?
No, you would use the radio as little as possible. as little as possible. You would only use the radio if you have spotted something that you could say is a bandits at 4 o'clock or whatever. Now you would only use that. You would only use the radio then. Then you wouldn't use it for only sort of chat. Sort of, did you sleep well today? Like that, you see there. Nothing like that, you see there. You always say that you must always maintain sort of radio silence, unless it was something that you had to, or you ought to. Alert the leader to sort of.
So it's just in the case of alarm, basically.
Well, if you said that I can see bandits at say 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, you see, about 3 or 4 or 5 thousand feet above, as you see there, then it would be after the squadron leader, if he saw it, when he was alerted to have a look, to then maneuver the squadron into the right position to meet them. So or you might even, if there were a few squadrons about, you might even wait and see what they're going to do.
So what would happen on a typical mission? You're in formation, you're flying across, you're keeping a good lookout. I presume you'd start keeping a lookout right from the start.
Oh yes, you look straight away. Oh yes, absolutely. Oh yes. You never stop looking at you.
What would happen on it? Say when you would keep on with this escorting of bombers to somewhere like Abbeville, somewhere in France. Say, what would happen next?
Well, if you haven't spotted anything there, or there was no enemy, it was just a routine sort of thing. They would deposit their bombs and turn back and go home, and that was that. You would escort them back again. But if you did see some, then of course you would then go to meet them, and to intercept them, to make sure that they don't get at the bombers.
Now, what would happen? Give us an idea. I don't know whether you remember a particular occasion, or whether it's or whether it's easy just to look at it generally. What would happen when you met German fighters?
Well, if you met German fighters, it usually. Virtually in a flash, there was a melee of aircraft flying backwards and forwards and up and down and sideways. You see, it's now all wheeling around, the Germans would try to get at the things at the bombers. You see, when you try to chase them away or follow them. You see, now and it was actually quite funny because to begin with, you could see that there were about 20 or 30 aircraft around you. After virtually 10 seconds, there was nothing around you. They were gone somewhere, you see. But the skies were, and it's sort of, the speeds are quite great, because you would then be flying, I think, about 350 miles an hour, 350 knots an hour, you see. It's not really, you'd be flying quite a bit faster to catch up with the chap or whatever, you see. Now so at that speed, you see, and of course this squadron would disperse, you see, because they would attack, different sections would attack different parts of the enemy formation. So it was virtually after a few, well, it felt so that it was quite long actually, but usually it was no more than about 10-15 seconds, you see, that you suddenly lost that you were alone in the sky, you see.
Could you understand what was happening in a dogfight, they used to call it?
Well, yes, you could. Of course, you would fix your own sort of, as if it were a victim, you see, and try to get at him, and at the same time you were trying, if you remembered, not to make sure that nobody on your bloody tail trying to get at you, you see there, but of course you haven't got the sight. You haven't got eyes in your backside, so you couldn't really see properly. But you just helped. You see the.
What would you? Were you scared in dogfights?
You were not
like?
Really scared. No. You were not really scared. No. You were. Say a little bit this way. There was no time to be scared. It's probably a funny thing to say, you see, but there really was no time to be scared, you see. You could be a bit scared afterwards, you see, when you're, oh, crumbs, no. Well, I'm still alive, so that's all right. But there was no time to be scared at the I suppose you didn't really think about it, that it's, are you scared or not, you see, not really. You just try to get at the chap, you see, make sure that you try to get at him and make sure that nobody's trying to get at you.
It's very difficult in these high-speed dogfights to hit anybody or anything.
It is difficult, yes.
Well, were you able to, yourself? Did you ever hit
him? Yes, you were able to, yes. Several occasions, you see, when you actually were shooting at something, you see, I mean, of course, the chap in front of you would be weaving and trying to get away, and it was difficult to catch them anyway. You see, unless you really found them absolutely unaware that you were there, which actually, unfortunately, never happened to me. You see, the buggers always knew when I was there, so there was no. By the time I could shoot at them, you see, they knew that I was there, you see, and they were evading and all that, you see, there's no.
So, were you able to shoot any down, or would you just damage them, or what was
it? Damage them, I suppose, really. I haven't had any confirmed thing that I have actually shot down, you see. I had few things that were damaged. When you fire your guns, at the same time you take a picture of what you're doing, and the picture will show actually whether you are hitting the chap or whether you're not hitting the fellow, you see, or whether you're missing it by so 20 yards to the left or 20 yards to the right, or it'll be all behind him or all in front of him, you see. It was quite clever, actually. The film actually would show. And after every sortie, if you took if you did a bit of shooting, well, not after every sortie, but if you did something, so in the evening or the next day, you would have a cinema show, and you would have the films shown of what you have done and what the others, what are there, of the of. It was quite good fun actually to see what you were doing and by how much you missed the bugger.
So you did score hits, but you never had a confirmed kill.
I never had.
Did
a confirmed
many of the squadron have confirmed
kills? Oh yes,
kills? Did many of the squadron have confirmed kills?
Oh yes, some of them had confirmed kills. Some of them just didn't. You see. And one more thing I can tell you actually at this stage, that when you had a young pilot on your wing, he was told that you whatever happens, you mustn't lose me. And so if it comes to a sort of melee of this, that you always instill it so that you're going to be so 30, 40 yards away from me, but you must know exactly where I am every time, and forget about anything else. Make sure you don't lose me, you see. Now, I remember on one occasion, actually, my wingman, you see, after I've been debriefed after the captain, I said no, I was firing at the other Messerschmitt, you see, there, but I don't know what happened. While my wingman said he didn't see anything, he didn't see me firing, he didn't see any, He didn't see any message rings. He didn't see anything. It was only when he saw the actual picture, or my picture, that he said, "There you are. There, that's what I was fighting at." He said, "Oh Christ, never saw that."
So
it was quite. You could see how they just didn't see it. You see, or it was.
They had a lack of air vision, or whatever.
Well, no. It wasn't that. He was so concentrating on not losing me that he just didn't see anything else.
So you might or might not get a dog fight, you know. And then
there was always a dog fight, you see. There was always, but I mean, it's sort of you either lost it, you either lost him so because he's that he was too quick for you, or even if you did fire at him here, you may not always have hit him, you see. There's no.
Would they ever get through to the bombers, or were you always able to keep them?
You were trying for them not to get through, not to get through to the bombers. You see, there. I must have done quite a number of bomber escorts, and at that time, I don't remember one getting through to the bombers. Actually. Later on the war, yes.
Because you went back to Northolt later on with the fire. Yeah.
Oh, yes. It was a different,
but
slightly different scenario.
In this phase, you were successful in keeping them away.
At that time, yes. Mind you, on the other hand, that was on the flights where I was actually taking part. Now, again, probably in the afternoon, the squad might have gone up again. You see, and because I wouldn't be flying again in the afternoon. The next lot would be flying. You see, and they might have had a success, or they might have had some losses that they couldn't prevent. You see, the chap coming to the bombers.
Now, what about, so you then escort them back?
Oh, you would escort them back to the back doors as far as you could, yes. And
what about the debriefing?
Well, then when you landed, you see, you were asked of what you, every pilot was debriefed, you see, if there was anything there. And unless there was no combat at all, then there was just the squadron leader would be debriefed, you see. Now, we've done this and that and that, and nothing happened. But normally, everybody would be debriefed if you would tell them what you saw and what you've done, if anything.